You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast, Detect, From Awareness to Action, Driving Multidisciplinary Application of Screening and Disease-Modifying Therapies in Early-Stage T1D. I am joined by Mrs. Amanda Troutman. Amanda and her husband have been caring for two children living with type 1 diabetes, a 15-year-old daughter, Jenna, diagnosed with clinical T1D in 2020 at age 11, and a 19-year-old son, William, diagnosed with early-stage presymptomatic T1D also in 2020 when he was 14 years old. She is here to share her family's experience. Amanda, welcome, and thank you so much for joining our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm excited to chat with you.
Good. First, why don't we begin with a summary of your family's journey with living with T1D? When and how did it enter your lives?
Well, in 2020, during the pandemic, when our daughter Jenna was 11, she was suddenly extremely fatigued. She had gone from 61 to 51 pounds in a very short time frame and continually asked for milk. We now know what these symptoms mean, but at the time, we went to two different doctors searching for answers, who each said, she has a bug. But thanks to our intuition and actually a nurse friend living with T1D, we finally tested her blood sugar. And several hours after dinner, she tested 565. We didn't know if that was good or bad or what it meant, but we were advised to take her to the emergency room. And there they confirmed what we feared, which was that Jenna had type 1 diabetes. She was in full diabetic ketoacidosis, or DKA. She spent 5 days in the ICU at our local hospital in Virginia. We didn't have any family history of T1D, and I couldn't have even accurately explained the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes at the time. So this was, to say the least, an incredible and sudden shock to our entire family.
You're right, to say the least, a shock, and I'm sure a bit traumatic even to be suddenly dealt with this news and have to navigate. How did you become aware of screening for T1D, and who in your family got screened?
Well, once we left the hospital, I was quite obsessed with learning and researching all things type 1 diabetes. And I learned that type 1 diabetes, what I had always thought was juvenile diabetes, can actually present at any age. We learned that we could screen our family for T1D through an at-home mail kit. We heard about this particular program through a T1D podcast.
We mentioned that William was around 14 at this time. Was he involved at all in the decision of whether or not to screen? And how did you receive the results later on?
Yeah, we actually did not give him an option to screen or not to screen. It was sort of something we did as a family, sort of like we all go to the dentist, we get yearly physicals. We received our free kit by mail, and so my husband, William, and I each sent a sample of our blood to be tested for T1D-related autoantibodies. It was sort of similar to the if you've ever done an at-home food allergy kit or an ancestry kit, something like that. So it wasn't anything that required any expert care or how to draw blood. It wasn't scary, basically. But we were told if the results were negative, we would receive a letter in the mail. But despite my daily hopeful trips to the mailbox, sadly, there was no letter. Instead, we received an email, which led to a phone call where I learned that William, who again was 14, had tested positive for multiple type 1 diabetes-related autoantibodies. So there was definitely a pit in my stomach, and my husband and I were devastated.
I can only imagine getting news like that. So after William got screened and he tested positive for 2 out of the 4 islet autoantibodies, which serve as an early warning that an individual is experiencing an autoimmune response that puts them at a much greater risk of developing clinical T1D and insulin dependence, what came next? Firstly, how did he feel about the results? How did you and your husband feel about the results? And what type of options did you have to consider next, including any potential options for treatment for William?
We were still in the midst of trying to navigate life with Jenna's stage 3 T1D diagnosis. She was definitely in what's considered the honeymoon stage. And that meant a lot of constant adjustments to her pump settings and how we were navigating. Often we were waking up in the middle of the night to manage a high or a low blood sugar. I would think to myself, you know, it could be fairly soon that I'm going to get a blood sugar alert and wonder, is this for William or is this for Jenna? What if it's both at the same time? It was definitely overwhelming. In December of 2020, William's screening team, the only treatment option we were given was to continue participating in research. The research team wanted to confirm his autoantibodies and give him an OGTT or oral glucose tolerance test, which he did not pass. The autoantibodies, along with those elevated blood sugar levels, confirmed his official stage 2 T1D diagnosis. So at that time, our only option was to continue screening and to observe his symptoms. Would they stall or would they progress?
When and how did you find out about teplizumab?
When we learned William was in stage 2 of type 1 diabetes, we felt like it was a waiting game. When would he also be insulin dependent like his sister? In my continued learning, I heard about teplizumab from a T1D podcast. We discussed it with William's screening research doctor who'd been following teplizumab's investigational process and clinical trials, and he was definitely excited about it. He agreed that William should receive teplizumab when and if it became available. So we anxiously looked forward to teplizumab's approval. My husband and I had our hands full helping Jenna with insulin, glucose, device management, all the things. So we had an up-close and personal look at how much time and energy managing stage 3 of T1D demanded. We knew William could progress to stage 3 at any moment, and we wanted to take action to delay that if possible. We would occasionally check his blood glucose levels. We kept a close eye on him. We watched for excessive thirst and other signs that he might be progressing to stage 3. During those 2 years, we actually relocated from Virginia to North Carolina. And I would say that his feelings were probably a mix between denial and hopefulness that he would be able to delay. So I think classic teenager mentality to focus on the here and now. But I think he trusted us and he trusted his medical team. So he was in a good place at that time.
We should note here that teplizumab is a CD3-directed monoclonal antibody approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in 2022 to delay the onset of stage 3 T1D in adults and pediatric patients age 8 years and older with stage 2 T1D. Teplizumab is administered by intravenous infusion once daily for 14 consecutive days. So, Amanda, even though you were aware of teplizumab being investigated in clinical trials, when William got diagnosed with stage 2 T1D, those trials were closed to enrolling new patients. After teplizumab was approved, however, he was still considered to be a good candidate for treatment. Can you tell us about the process of getting him access to teplizumab and why you felt it was important for him to be treated?
As soon as teplizumab was approved by the FDA in November of 2022, we began working urgently with our medical team and health insurance to schedule William's infusions. We were connected with a teplizumab compass navigator who was in frequent communication with us and was always so eager to help. He educated us, answered questions about receiving teplizumab. He even helped us with health insurance and applying for the financial program and reimbursement. Because it was so new, our local hospital had no experience with teplizumab. We inquired about the possibility of William getting his infusions there, but we were advised to stick with our current team that William had seen in Virginia. Our insurance was actually initially declined with the prescription for teplizumab on the grounds that this medication was only newly approved by the FDA, which was maddening to me because this medication I'd been reading about had actually been researched for decades. Our doctor quickly filed an appeal letter. My husband simultaneously appealed through his employer. Because he had an employee-funded insurance plan, he elevated the issue all the way to the head of human resources. And after many weeks of back and forth from our efforts, the Compass Navigator efforts, and our medical team, that was the action that granted approval. We then officially established care with William's endocrinologist in Virginia, and he wrote the prescription for teplizumab. He explained that teplizumab is given through infusions for 14 days in a row, said the most common side effects of teplizumab include rash, leukopenia, which is a decrease in white blood cell counts, and headache. We also learned that teplizumab may cause serious side effects, including cytokine release syndrome and lymphopenia, which is a decrease in a type of white blood cell called lymphocytes. It is important that patients tell their doctor if they are planning on vaccinations because teplizumab may affect how well they work. We were extremely excited about the possibility of delaying the progression of William's stage 2 T1D to stage 3 T1D with teplizumab. We let William's school know he would be excused for 2 weeks, and we made a 2-week reservation at a hotel near the hospital since it was a couple of hours away from our home. William was willing to take the 2 weeks off from school, friends, and his regular routine if it meant he could perhaps have more time in stage 2, where he didn't need to take insulin like his sister.
How was William's experience with the infusion process as well as his response to teplizumab?
Well, in January 2023, he started his teplizumab infusions. So for the first 4 days after arriving at the infusion center, he was given pre-medications and over-the-counter anti-nausea medication, a pain reliever, and an antihistamine to hopefully, possibly keep away or help reduce CRS symptoms. The doctor determined his antihistamine dose was too high because he experienced nausea, and he ultimately had William stop the antihistamine. William also had lab work done daily before each infusion. William opted for a PICC line instead of an IV so he wouldn't have to be poked with a needle every day, which was very much a relief to him. Of course, this was William's experience. Everyone is different and should make that decision with their healthcare team. So during those 2 weeks, he was tired, but overall, the infusion process went very well. During the first week, we would get to the infusion center around 11 and leave by about 3. The following week, the infusion process only took about 2 to 3 hours each day. Our routine was entirely changed, but thanks to the virtual learning that had been put in place during COVID, William was able to continue his schoolwork. We spent a lot of time in the hospital or at the hotel, actually watching Friends for the first time. I had seen it, but he had never seen any of the Friends shows, and eating ice cream in our beds, and it was a really special memory for us. So every night, we researched fun restaurants in town and enjoyed a nice dinner out. A lot of people do something special to celebrate the end of their infusions, and the day we returned was actually the night of the Super Bowl. So it was especially fun for William to be with his friends. They welcomed him back home, and they watched the big game together.
Sounds like the entire football nation was supporting and celebrating William's completion of his infusion process. That's so cool, Amanda. Finally, to wrap things up, how is William doing today? And when you reflect on your family's experience with T1D, what final thoughts or words of wisdom can you offer to both caregivers and healthcare providers with regards to screening for T1D and potentially treating stage 2 T1D with teplizumab?
We are forever grateful for screening and for teplizumab. William has not yet progressed to stage 3 of type 1 diabetes. Yay! He continues to see his endocrinologist 2 times a year. Completes lab work, and he wears a continuous glucose monitor for 10 days only prior to his appointments so we can assess his glucose levels. We also keep an eye out for symptoms associated with progression of stage 3 T1D, such as frequent urination, extreme thirst, and fatigue. And thankfully, so far, his glucose levels have remained steady. This fall, William will be a freshman in college. Now that his high school cross country and track days are behind him, he has shifted to disc golf, mountain biking, fishing, pretty much anything outside. And we are so grateful to have this chance to delay his progression to stage 3 of T1D. I would say because of teplizumab, he's been able to essentially, for the time being, skip over living with the relentless burden that we know so well with his sister of glucose, insulin, device management, and more importantly, his body has delayed the consequences of dangerously high and dangerously low blood sugars that come with a stage 3 of T1D diagnosis. We like to say that William has an extended childhood. I would also say that managing T1D is extremely demanding and very challenging at times. I'm so proud of my daughter when I watch all that she has to balance at such a young age. And I'm proud of William, too, for navigating his stage 2 T1D diagnosis. And I'm grateful to have a chance to delay his progression to stage 3 of T1D. I hope more people will learn about the risks of T1D and the importance of screening so that their introduction to diabetes is more like William's than like Jenna's. And if you have been screened and upon further testing are diagnosed with stage 2 of T1D, I would encourage you to be brave, to be bold, to advocate for yourself, and talk with your doctor to determine if teplizumab may be an option for you or for your loved one. We are certainly glad that we took those steps and investigated and found the right path for our son.
Well, Amanda, thank you so much. We're so glad to hear that William continues to do well and progression of T1D continues to be kept at bay for now for him. We wish him luck in starting his college career as a young adult. And we continue to wish Jenna luck in managing her type 1 diabetes as well. Thank you so much for being so open and so willing to share your family's experience with T1D. And we wish all of you continued success and health.
Thank you so much for this time. It is our hope that these continuations and modifications and disease progression will further benefit our son. And one day we might be having a conversation about stage 3 T1D. Who knows? But we're excited about the progress. And we are grateful for teplizumab for our family.
And that's all we have time for today. We'd like to once again thank Mrs. Amanda Troutman for sharing her perspectives on the importance of screening for type 1 diabetes and her family's decision to treat the early pre-symptomatic stage of the disease. I would like to also thank you, our audience, for joining us. Finally, I thank our supporter, Sanofi US, who provided an educational grant for this CME CE activity. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. In support of improving patient care, MedLearning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. Please join us for another episode of this podcast series on T1D. For more podcasts and other accredited activities, please visit us online at www.medlearninggroup.com.